So was there a particular moment that it might have been watching your boyfriend's eye surgery when you said, I have got to do this book?
Well, what actually happened was before that surgery took place, I occasionally write for various national magazines, and one of them is O, which is the Oprah magazine, and an editor there had asked me if I'd be interested in going to Tibet to write about this amazing woman named Sabriya Ten Birken, who is German, she's blind, and she founded the first school for the blind in Tibet. Sabriya had always had an interest in Asian studies, and when she was in university in Germany, she went to her professors and she said, I want to study Tibetan studies. And they said to her, you know, we're very sorry, that's going to be impossible for you because you're blind. Tibetan is one of the few languages that nobody has ever found a way to translate in Tibetan because it's too complicated. And all of our texts are in Tibetan. You won't be able to read them, so sorry, go someplace else. And she said to them, just let me try. And in the course of studying, she was the first person in history to find a method of translating Tibetan into Braille. And her teachers were astounded. And they said, you know, this is revolutionary. And by the way, Tibet has a very high rate of blindness because of the altitude there, the ultraviolet rays.
Oh, cataract, sure, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And then the ultraviolet rays are very damaging to young kids' eyes. And it's also matters of hygiene. Sabriya Ten Birken went to Tibet, and when she discovered how horribly blind people were treated there, she was determined to start the first school for the blind. There were no associations for the blind in Tibet, and this is true in many countries in the developing world.
Let me just jump in here, though, because it just seems so counterintuitive, though. If you got a greater degree of blind people because of your physical surroundings, then you're actually saying a greater percentage of your population is useless or stupid or whatever Tibet's prevailing opinions are.
Right. The problem in Tibet is, I won't say it's quite, it's religious, but there's a very strong, a lot of superstition in Tibet, and there's a very, very powerful feeling that blind people, anybody who's born blind or loses their sight at a later age, they are blind because they committed some terrible sin in a past life. And so they're afraid to touch a blind person. They ostracize them. They throw stones at them. They spit at them. Families who live in rural places, when a child is born blind, they say that child is an idiot. He's useless. They lock him in a room. You know, I met a boy who had been locked in a room for 10 years of his life simply because he was blind. And this boy was brilliant. So it's these strange prejudices and superstitions, cultural, about the blind, that if you stop and think about it, you understand that it's irrational. It doesn't make any sense. And so my purpose in writing this book is to spread what I've learned, not only about perceptions of the blind and how they're treated. One Tibetan girl I met who came from a small village, she was born blind. Her twin brothers were blind, and her father was blind. It was obviously some genetic thing. The villagers told the blind members of that family, you might as well all commit suicide because you are useless and you're a burden to the rest of your family. Now, this is in the 1990s, late 1990s. I had students from Liberia, from Madagascar, from Kenya, who had been treated horribly simply because they were blind. There's nothing wrong with their brains. There's nothing wrong with their minds. It's only their eyes. But eyesight is so important to us that we somehow can't get over that gap.
That's an amazing one. So in this context, then, particularly in Tibet, I mean, how was the efforts of Sabriya Tenberken taken?
Well, if anybody looks this woman's name up, she has become internationally famous. She founded this organization called Braille Without Borders. And so she founded the school in Lhasa, in Tibet, and now she and her partner, Paul Cronenberg, have founded another school in southern India. That's an international training institute for, when I was there, it was strictly for blind adults from the developing world who had an ambition to start their own social enterprises. And most of my students there, they were blind, and they wanted to return to their home countries and spread awareness about blindness and start their own schools. So Sabriya, the organization is doing tremendous work. And she is actually in the United States right now. We're going to be doing a little bit of publicity together. She also has written a book. She's such an inspiring person that, and when she speaks publicly, sighted people who are in the audience and see her, they're astounded by what she's done. She went across Tibet on horseback with two other sighted people, going from village to village, looking for blind children to bring to the school in Lhasa. And the parents of these children said, no problem, take that child. He's useless. It's a burden. Please take him away from us. And the fascinating thing is these kids would have had no future in those villages. They go to the school in Lhasa. They learn how to read. They learn how Braille. They learn how to write Braille. They learn Chinese, which in Tibet is important. They learn English. They learn computer skills. They learn how to take care of themselves, to wash and dress. And then when they go home and visit their families, the parents who used to think, oh, my kid is stupid, look at these kids and they say, my God, this child can do more than I can do. And this is how perceptions change by example. Not by talking, but by example. And this organization, Braille Without Borders, is really booming.
And how many students has she trained over the years at the school?
Oh, in Tibet, I think there are close to 300. And in India, there must be now, I was there 5 years ago, there must be, we're just getting close to 150 now. And those people in India, they're not children. They're adults, they're thinking to found another school someplace in Africa. And basically, what they're doing is trying to spread the word. But these one thing I want to say is these prejudices against the blind. Yes, they're very strong in poorer countries, but they also exist in the United States. I did a radio show the other day with Baruch College in New York. Mm-hmm. And one of the guys I was on with was blind. He went blind in his 20s. He had retinitis pigmentosa, and he is now, I think he's in his early 40s, and he's now completely blind. And he told me that when he lost his eyesight, his father said to him, I believe this is my fault. God is punishing me for something I must have done wrong in my life. Your blindness is a message from God.
Wow. So even in our culture, if we get this.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, this is a huge country. What are we, 300 million people?
Mm-hmm.
And we're all kinds of people. I think his father may have been, I think he was from Greece, but Greece is a modern European country. With all the problems it's having now, it is still, you know, it's not Liberia. So these attitudes about the blind are really widespread, and they're very hard to get rid of. But the moment you meet an intelligent blind person who is self-confident, you realize how silly these perceptions are.
They truly are. The book is called For the Benefit of Those Who See, Dispatches from the World of the Blind. Rosemary Mahoney is the author and our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. Here's Vince in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Rosemary Mahoney.
Good morning. I was Peace Corps volunteer in Colombia working with the blind. And it was just amazing. As she said, parents would keep the children locked up in back bedrooms and also bring them to orphanages and say that, you know, they couldn't deal with it and they were just abandoning the children. And we found a program that I help work with that music was a great way to get people in the community and the parents to respond better to people. And I was just wondering if, you know, the Peace Corps is still involved with programs like that, if she had any experience in the countries where she worked.
All right, thanks for that.
I don't know. I can't tell you about the Peace Corps. We weren't involved with them, but I would like to say, to confirm what you've just said, one of my students in India was from Colombia. He had been blind since birth, and his sister was also born blind. And when when it was clear that these two infants were blind, his parents, who were very devout Catholics, went to their local priest and they asked him to say a mass with the intention that the two children would die, because the blindness was such a such a burden for the family, and also the people in their village would ostracize them if they tried to raise these two blind children. And so I think the caller, I'm sorry, I don't know your name. Tell me your name again.
Vince.
You're still there, Vince. So you experience firsthand what I'm telling you. And this is, now we're talking about Tibet, Africa, Colombia, South America. This is all over the world. And that young man who was my student in India, he was 40-something. He was one of the brightest students in the school. His English was impeccable, and he learned it by listening to Voice of America when he was living in Colombia. And the difficulties that he was one of the brightest kids in his class growing up, but nobody would hire him when he got out of school because he was blind. This is a problem in the United States. The unemployment rate for blind people in the United States is twice the unemployment rate for sighted people. And that's purely because of prejudice.
Well, you think so? I mean, even though there are certainly limits to the kinds of jobs they can do.
I have a lot of statistics about this, but yes, I mean, this has been confirmed by the National Federation for the Blind, by the American Association for the Blind. I got a letter yesterday from a blind woman who's been has worked for a corporation in a very high-powered job. And she said, I want you to spread the word that in 25 years of working in corporate America, I have never met another blind or visually impaired person at the level that I'm at. And believe me, there are many people who can do the job that she's doing. It's a very complicated thing. And one thing I want to say is, you can't condemn sighted people for having these notions and having these emotions about blindness, but we do need to make an effort to understand each other.
Absolutely, but that's amazing, though. I mean, I hard to believe that nobody else was at that level. She was in the corporate world in 25 years.
I got this letter yesterday,
wow.
And I've heard a lot of blind people are writing to me and telling me their own stories, and they say, you know, it's great that you've written this, and it's great that you're writing about what's happening in other cultures, but the situation is not too much better in the United States. We have the lowest rate of blindness in the world, and yet polls were taken, and the general assessment is that Americans fear blindness. It's the most feared physical ailment after only AIDS and cancer. And I think there's a direct correlation there. The less familiar you are with a thing, the more frightened you become of it. Where I live in Bristol, Rhode Island, I never see blind people. If you live in a big city, yes, you'll see them more often. But it's in the United States, we don't know blind people the way, for example, Indians do. You see many more blind people on the street in India. And all of this is really a matter of ignorance. And I don't equate ignorance with stupidity. Ignorance is just not knowing. And so it's the more information you have, the better relationships we'll have.
So obviously you wanted to clear up some of your own misconceptions about blindness. Was there one universal thing that people across all of the national boundaries you traveled said to you about what sighted people don't understand about blindness?
Yes. The predominant thing is blind people have told me is sighted people think that we are helpless and that we're a little bit dim. We're not too bright, and they speak down to us, and they expect us to be a little bit boring, because if you're blind, how can you have interesting experiences? And what they all said to me was, all we want is to be recognized as human beings who have a mind, just like anyone else.
I think the question that that Steve had posed as Reed relates to me is that he was asking about blind people dreaming, which gets into larger questions of whether people have been blind, for example, since birth, even have much of a visual sense.
Well, that is fascinating. You know, there's not just one kind of blindness. People who are born blind, congenitally blind, they have a very different experience from people who lose their sight at a later date. One of my students, a Tibetan guy, he wrote to me the other day, and he's been blind since he was about three, so he doesn't have a lot of visual memories. And he said to me in his email, "Rose, I saw you in my dream the other night." And I haven't responded to him, but I wanted to ask him, what did I look like? How did I appear to you? I had a German student who was born premature, and she had retinopathy because of the oxygen in the incubator. She was completely blind from infancy. And one day at the institute in India, I said to her, "Jessie, how do you imagine human faces?" And she just shrugged, and she said, "I don't. That's not important to me. I identify people by voice, by what they say, by how they speak to me, and even partly by how they feel."
Feel as in actual fingertip touch?
Well, you know, holding a person's
okay,
hand.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.